The football kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport, and Premier Sports.
You're very welcome to the football kickoff with Sky. We're live every Friday morning, bang on 10:30 across all of OTB social channels, talking about the biggest stories in sport and the best five games to watch on telly this weekend. Let's get into it.
The football kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport, and Premier Sports.
Every single week, I find new and interesting ways to screw up that intro. I'm supposed to tell you to subscribe, particularly on our YouTube channel, and point to wherever the subscribe button is, but it's one of those four corners. You can see it on the YouTube channel, so just click the subscribe button. This is the football kickoff with Sky, all the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport, and Premier Sport. I'm delighted to welcome back to the programme David Myler. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, gents. You all right?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Also with us is Colin Bowie. Colin, how are you?
Jared, David. Hello.
You've got the Football Italia, the Channel 4, the logo. Is it like...
That's right.
Is it original era or is it like a recent knockoff?
You asked me that before, I think.
I don't think so.
And I gave you the answer. I got it online at a reasonable rate. But this show was my childhood.
And so it was real.
Our childhood.
It was real at the time, yeah.
Yeah, Channel 4 every Saturday morning.
Myler might be too young, is he? To fully appreciate
it. He's not that young.
Call him your same age as me. You're 32, aren't you?
33. Yeah.
Okay.
But we would have.
We
would have watched.
Yeah, Colm lived a couple of hundred yards on the road from me. Jared.
Oh, I didn't know this. I'm getting pincer movement.
Yeah.
Okay, you can tell us then, David. Was he ever any good at football or anything?
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah,
and
Look at that tone. He was good. Yeah.
No, but it's very difficult to say who's good and who's not. Like, I play five-a-side with my pals and they all go, oh, this fella's unbelievable. And I'm like, well, he's playing five-a-side on a Wednesday night. Like, he can't be that good. Like,
when you play five-a-side with your mates, though, you look like Zidane, right?
Probably more like Ronaldinho.
Because we played with Caban one time and he looked unbelievable and he wasn't even trying. Now, we were all like, we were a little bit older than you guys. So this is what, 4 years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago. And he just was like really not trying, but nutmegging around us and dribbling. And it was like, you know,
I just missed that game.
Did you?
Yeah, by weeks.
It was just before you arrived.
Yeah, just.
And
Colin was training for that as well.
It's a road to sunrise till now, like, you know. That's all we were doing.
But Jared, I had one years ago, right? Where me and Colin were from, there's an AstroTurf up the road in Gary Duff. And I remember I came home during the summer. This would have been probably 2013 or 14 summer. And my best pal said to me, oh, will you come up? And we're having a little kickabout and, you know, a little seven-a-side thing and come up with a bit of fitness in the summer. So I said, oh, going off play and whatever. And he said, oh, make sure you wear a light blue top. So I threw on a jersey and went up. We ended up winning the game. I think it was like, you know, one of them like 18-4 or something like that, right? And after we were going for a pint and he said to me, oh, I'm so happy you came up because that was the top of the table clash and we needed to win and whatever. But there was absolute uproar because at that time I was playing in the Premier League and I kind of just come up and slotted in, sent a half for them and played like, and we battered the other team. There was uproar over. I think they actually tried, the opposition team tried to get him kicked out of the league.
Rightly so. They've just grandfathered in a Premier League superstar.
But by all accounts, though, there's no like rules in what you like, who can play and who can't play. Do you know what I mean? It was like, if you've got a, like, it just happened. It fell on that, you know, that night I was home and we played and we won and scored a couple of goals.
Inspired by Montgomery Burns, it turns out, the team. Excellent work. A good ringer. There's nothing like a good ringer story to decide a top of the table league clash. We haven't had you on in ages, David. And with the Roy Keane to Sunderland thing, I was putting two and two together and going, who could possibly be in that backroom team?
A lot of people have asked me that. Look, if Roy had taken over, of course, I would have probably reached out to him and said, I would have been desperate to get involved. It would have been something that would have been perfect for me at that time. But obviously, I don't know. I haven't spoken to Roy. I just want to make that clear. I don't know what happened in the contract negotiations or whatever, if he didn't fancy it or whatever, you know, went wrong initially. But it's a shame because I'd love to see him back managing, not so that I could try and pester him to give me a job. But
and that's an added bonus for sure.
Yeah, I say that all the time. I think he should be coaching or he should be managing. Like, I definitely think he's got the capability to still do it. I played under him at Sunderland. I've seen what, you know, obviously his time at Ireland when he was assistant to Martin. I think he has a lot to offer. I think we get a glimpse of it now in his analysis. But I definitely do think he should get back into managing, yeah.
See, I love watching on TV, and we'd see far less of him on TV if he was to take a management gig.
That was my question. Like, I was going to ask you, David, is he not a bigger loss to TV if he goes back into management?
I suppose we're all familiar now with him, certainly with the FA Cup being on this week. You see him on ITV, and then on the weekend, he usually covers one of the main Premier League games on a Sunday. You still get your press conferences. I imagine Sky will be flying up to, you know, would have been flying up to the Northeast to, you know, do a League One press conference to try and get a reaction on how they're going or how they're doing or what's he thinking. I still think you'd see a lot of him on television. It's a bit like, the best way to describe it is a bit like when the golf is on and even when Tiger's not playing well. Tiger's always on the telly, so that's what people want to see. Yeah. So I definitely think you'd see enough of Roy on the telly. But look, whether or not he gets back into it, he has said multiple times he does. I hope he does. I think he's more to offer than just his analysis on a Saturday or Sunday.
And did it kind of sharpen your own desire to get in at that level as a coach and to be working around first teams again?
100%. Like, what I've learned since I've retired is, like, obviously I've done my badges with the FAI. I'm currently involved with Ireland under-17s, which I enjoy. But the only problem I have is it's international time. Of course, we do have, like, slight little training days because, obviously, the young lads, the majority of them are based in Ireland. So when they have school breaks, we might meet up for a weekend to do, you know, some sessions or whatever to keep on top of them and keep seeing how they're developing. But of course, you want to get into the nitty gritty of the Monday to Friday preparing for a game on a Saturday or Sunday. That's what I want to get into. That's, you know, I do want to become a manager, and that is the end goal, and that's the way I want to do it. And obviously, I know I've got to earn my stripes and become a coach and work, you know, through the development phase of coaching young boys and girls and then get on and push on to the ladder. But that definitely is something I want to do, yeah.
And is that easy enough to do? Is there a clear enough pathway for that, or is it kind of, you know?
It's very difficult.
Yeah. He's frozen.
Frozen in thought.
It was a good thought, though.
I wonder, will he be able to balance the burgeoning and very much blossoming video career that he has?
Maybe.
Video game. And I never knew he was so into gaming when we were growing up.
Well,
it wasn't something that was so obvious.
This wasn't supposed to be our school days piece, but it's turned into that now. Yeah. That's quite enjoyable. We're happy to do that if you want. Right, look, I'll tell you a little bit about what we're talking about this week. We asked who's going to score first in this weekend's Manchester derby: Ronaldo, De Bruyne, Sterling and Fernandes. That was our snap poll. And De Bruyne is top of the list on 41%. Sterling is second on 29%. Ronaldo is on 20% nearly. So obviously a lot of you out there are not paying attention to what's going on in the world of football at the moment. And Fernandes is the lowest on that poll at nearly 10%. A reminder to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Every Friday we're going to talk about the biggest stories in football and the best five games on telly. This is the Football Kickoff with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sport. Our fixtures, as you can see there: Leicester versus Leeds on Saturday, 12:30. Liverpool versus West Ham, 5:30 kickoff on Sky Sports. The Leicester Leeds game is BT Sport. On Sunday, Watford against Arsenal kicks off at 2:00. On Sky Sports, and then the big game of the weekend live on Sky Sports: Manchester City versus Manchester United. Also live on Off the Ball with Nathan and Brian Kerr in the stadium for the first time since the pandemic. And then Monday Night Football is decent this week. It's Spurs versus Everton. There's a lot riding on that, and you know, Frank Lampard's in a bit of a sticky scenario. He will know by that stage whether or not any of the other teams in the relegation zone have actually managed to win a game. So let's wait and see what happens over the course of the weekend. But let's get into this then. We'll leave the Manchester derby until we get David back. Leicester against Leeds kicks off at 12:30. It is a stigma, admits the new Leeds head coach. The Ted Lasso thing is a stigma. Mm. I could do without it. It's very, very difficult for him.
Really hard.
Like,
the only other example we have, Bob Bradley, 2016 with Swansea City, didn't last too long and was much maligned because he was referring to road games instead of away games and PKs instead of penalties. But it doesn't. I mean, it's just terms. It doesn't matter. If you're a good manager, you're a good manager. And it
shouldn't
Jesse
matter
Marsh
as much now, right? And the fact that the fact that Ted Lasso eventually becomes successful, that's very important in this narrative.
Yeah, Bob just missed the Ted Lasso boat. But hopefully Jesse Marsh does well. Like, he has a tough anyway replacing Marcelo Bielsa, even if he was an established manager, because Bielsa's so beloved. I mean, they were talking about it last night, Nathan and John Giles on Off the Ball, that Bielsa's likely to get a statue at Elland Road, maybe even ahead of Gilesy himself. I mean, that's how loved he is. So Marsh has to come in and deal with that, obviously save them from relegation, and then he has the stigma of being an American coach.
Yeah.
So I wish him very well. I hope it works out well for him. But he has a good track record. I mean, he good CV at the Red Bull Group. He did very well with Salzburg. It was really only the Leipzig gig that didn't work out when he replaced Julian Nagelsmann. He left by mutual consent at the back end of last year, but he's straight back into management. Everywhere he's gone, he's worked his way up from the bottom up. New York Red Bulls, he did very well with them. I think he's the most successful manager ever. So he's a good CV, and I hope it works out for him.
What is success here? Not getting relegated.
I think so. I mean, I think that's all they need. Not getting relegated, getting Patrick Bamford, Calvin Phillips back, Liam Cooper as well. So if you get those three players back playing
Bamford
well.
Bamford not doubtful?
He's back training, I believe. I think he started training with Marsh's first session, okay. But I don't know if he's going to be ready for the Leicester City game tomorrow. If you get those three players back, some sort of form going, if they can just stay up, they might stay up by default. There might be three worse teams than Leeds. They might get away with it. And then if they can rebuild, but they really have to invest in the summer because Bielsa's gone. And Bielsa himself is like a limitless transfer budget because of the way he gets you to play and gets everybody to rise above themselves. Maybe Marsh has that in him too, but I imagine that he really needs some serious money to get players in to have a proper good go of a stable Premier League era for Leeds,
yeah,
rather than going back down again.
Maybe they flog their best assets now at the top of the market for them and they reinvest that money wisely. We'll see. He obviously will have a reasonable understanding of the transfer market, and their recruitment has been good so far. So it would be a disaster for them if they did go down. But you suspect that the atmosphere around the club and the ownership of the club is actually in a relatively strong position where if they are going to be a yo-yo club for a couple of seasons, it's not going to be forever. With the situation with Leicester, have they turned a corner? Are they getting better?
That was their first win in 2022 against Burnley during the week.
They'd also just
in the league.
Just off the back of a good win in Europe.
Yeah, in the league, yeah. And it's their first away clean sheet of the season.
So,
maybe. But they brought on James Maddison and Jamie Vardy. So if, again, a bit like Leeds, if you get those key players back into your team, you never know. I do feel with Brendan Rodgers that he's kind of run out of steam with Leicester. And I think like you've been saying all season, the Manchester United rumours came and went. Maybe he missed his chance there. And now he's like, I just need to get back to that Liverpool reputational place in football. Whereas Leicester, he won the FA Cup at Leicester. He's made them a really, really good outlet who nearly qualified the Champions League twice in a row.
Yeah.
I don't know if he has that left in him again at Leicester. I think Rodgers is a brilliant manager, but I think he's thinking, where do I go next? Bit of a crossroads.
When we get David back, we can talk about Tielemans. We've talked in great detail about how good Tielemans is in the past. He has not down tools, but he is not playing to the level that you would expect him to play at. And that's a function of the manager being available for other clubs as well.
Mm.
Because, well, sorry, you're saying I can't look at a potential move here. Really? Is that what you're telling me? Because, you know, we know your track record here.
Yeah.
And that's hard for him to overcome. I think that maybe if he makes it to the end of the season and doesn't leave, then there will be a reset and there will be fresh energy next year, and I would expect him to do better next season. But this season's a bit of a disaster.
Possibly. Tielemans captained Leicester against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. Don't know if you saw that ground, the City ground. Forest destroyed Leicester and Tielemans was taken off, you know, ruthlessly. I think less than an hour gone. Very little eye contact between player and manager. Yeah. Was the captain.
So you've got to sell him. Like, you do have to sell him. You can't force him to play next season.
Are you, like you say, you regroup in the summer, but Leicester, they're strange this season, like a lot of teams. And I think if they can just about get kind of Europa League, Conference League era, you never know.
It could be okay. We've got David Motter back. We're just talking about Tielemans, and we've spoken before about how amazing Tielemans is, but he seems to have down tools a little bit recently. Is it kind of fair enough when it looks like your manager might be interested in working somewhere else?
I think it's unfair to say he's down tools. I know he's obviously come out and said that he's not going to like renegotiate a contract and that he wants to obviously explore Champions League football. I imagine there was a couple of sniffs around him and he feels that he can probably progress on. This is the next kind of stage in his career. I obviously came on here and said after Wijnaldum left, I'd love if Liverpool signed him. I still think that. I think Liverpool could probably add another midfielder. I feel Harvey Barnes plays midfield, but I think he's better, you know, suited in the front three positions. But definitely, definitely there will be a lot of clubs sniffing around Tielemans.
Tielemans would really give Liverpool an extra layer of flexibility. Not to say that they're not particularly flexible at the moment, but it would kind of future-proof their ability to do what they're doing now as, say, Thiago gets a little bit older or if Fabinho was to ever be required as a centre-back again. At the moment, everybody's fit and it's very difficult for him to keep everybody happy, but you add Tielemans into that and I don't really see a downside.
No, I think you're spot on. And of course, look, it gives you that extra option midfield. You even seen, you know, last weekend for the cup final, I know Naby Keita came in. He played relatively well. I think they were, himself and Henderson, very good out of possession in terms of, you know, slowing down Kovacic and Kante. But overall, they didn't bring a lot going forward. And certainly when they kind of, you know, they went off, they kind of, Liverpool kind of lost their way a little bit. And that's when Chelsea started to kind of gradually get on top and they were creating a lot of chances. So it would be nice, you know, Thiago unfortunately has picked up the odd injury here and there. He is obviously, I think he's bang on 30, maybe 31. So he is that age that, you know, you do look at alternatives and players that can kind of come in. But at the same time, sure, Liverpool don't have that philosophy of, you know, bringing someone in that's going to obviously be earning high wages, that's going to be sitting around on the bench and not playing, you know, every game or every minute of every game. So it is certainly one. Does he come in to replace someone? Do they look, you know, potentially Naby Keita could be the one to move on. He's huffed and puffed at Liverpool where it's never really worked out. He's never been able to put a significant number of games together. He's always picked up injuries. And then when he's got into the side, he kind of gets three games going and then he's out of the team and then it's a slight knock. And it's just been unfortunate that it's not worked out for him, but there might be a case that he might move, you know, Jurgen might look to move Naby Keita on and bring in someone like a Tielemans.
Let's move on to the Liverpool West Ham game. We'll come back to the City Man United game in a moment, but kind of this game is we're reviewing it in the, or previewing it in the context of the Manchester Derby. So for Liverpool to get maximum joy from this weekend, they just need to put on a performance, win this game, almost irrespective of a performance, and just ratchet up that tension on Manchester City, because City are showing some signs of being human, which we didn't expect them to, David.
No, but like, look, we always go back on City with that comparison of winning, what was it, 17 games in a row or something like that. And we always feel that Manchester City can do that any time. At the same, you know, same time, Liverpool are capable of doing that. Obviously, they've won their last five. They won the League Cup. They're going into the West Ham game. But by all accounts, it's not going to be easy. You know, West Ham obviously beat them earlier in the season. It's just going to be a difficult game. I know Liverpool are home. There's a feel-good factor. Obviously, they play before Man City, so there is that incentive that we can get the 3 points.
Oh, the connection's gone again. Right, Liverpool-West Ham, quickly. We'll do the Manchester Derby.
2-1 Liverpool, my prediction, because they haven't dropped home points at Anfield since October in the Premier League, and West Ham have only won 2 of their last 8 away.
I think it could actually be a 3-0 and not feel like a 3-0 until the third goal goes in. You're like, yeah, oh, of course maybe. That was a 3-0.
No, I can see Antonio scoring maybe when Liverpool are 2 up, kind of like Norwich during the week.
Okay, let's do Manchester City versus Manchester United, 4:30. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr live from the Etihad on Off the Ball this Sunday. It's also on Sky Sports. There's not much reason to hope for Manchester United, is there?
No, we don't have a bad record against Manchester City in the Pep Guardiola era. He's only won 5 of his 11 Manchester derbies, Guardiola. But the last 4 Manchester United managers have lost their first Manchester derby. So you could say statistically it's in the balance here. Ralf Rangnick, this is his first really huge game in charge. He actually had quite a favourable fixture list when he took over from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. His first kind of big name on paper was Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. First half was atrocious. Got it together in the second half, came away with a good result. So it's really in the balance here. I suppose it depends if Cristiano Ronaldo plays, how United will do here.
Is it in the balance? Are you actually comparing the best team in Europe to Atletico Madrid, the crumbling edifice of their empire?
Look at the results in the recent years. You would have said the exact same thing about City, and then United come in and get a result. Usually, though, Anthony Martial has something to do with it. It's when he comes alive. And, of course, he's on loan at Sevilla now. It really depends, I think, on the front three that United pick.
Okay, David, you're back. Man City versus Manchester United. I mean, surely this is the time the Man City dragged them into the deep water and go, right, Let's see that crisis unfold.
You would think it, and obviously City have been kind of huffing and puffing in the last couple of games, especially with, you know, the result against Everton and the big outcry over the handball, obviously losing to Spurs. But United, as Colm said, United have a way of getting results at the Etihad. It's one of those that will shape up that you literally can't call it. We all expect City to dominate the ball, batter them, and then just kind of create chances and score goals. But I just don't know, Jar. I think it's one of those games you just can't call.
The way the Spurs play, right? I don't mean with the formation and the wing backs and the game being exactly the same that Manchester United would have to change the formation, because we were talking about this during the week and it was like, oh, Man United have to change the formation. But you don't have to change the formation to play a counter-attacking game. Maybe you do. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's better if you do, and it will give you more security. But actually, you can just give different players responsibilities. Like the tactical flexibility that Ralf Rangnick can get from his players surely is something that he can communicate to them this week. Can they just play in the counterattack and hit City the way Spurs did? Can they just go, oh, that worked really well, maybe we'll try that all week this week and do nothing but that?
100%. You know, you have to, that's what it's all about. You go in for every game you go into, you've got a game plan. It's something that you'll work on all week. That was kind of Rangnick's big problem, if you remember, at the very start. They were kind of playing every 2-3 days, that he didn't have time to actually kind of go, I want to implement my styles. I know United want to play at a high pressing, but if they go for a high pressing against Manchester City, then the gaps will appear and they'll get cleaned out. I can imagine, as Colm said there, what will they pick their front three? They'll play Ronaldo, but they'll probably have Sancho. I wouldn't be surprised if Rashford starts, just for someone with electrifying pace. That's what they'll go for. They'll go for two quick players. Once Manchester City have the ball, they'll drop off into a mid to low block and they'll just say, do you know what, keep it there in front of us. And they turn over possession, because we know City are going to commit men forward, and we'll look to counter-attack and we'll break. And with Cristiano, you've always got a chance. If you give him the ball in or on the box, he'll score goals.
Every Friday night, after the League of Ireland games, a place for you to come to give your opinion, to vent. And there's a little button down on the left-hand corner where you can say that you want to talk.
Catch League of Ireland Late Night, Friday nights at 10 on Twitter Spaces. Follow at Off the Ball.
David, you know Harry Maguire. How do you think he's dealing with the latest leaks?
Do you know what? It's even for me, I know him personally, if you take out the football, it's been tough even for me listening to, like, you know, the criticism that he's taken. Of course, look, I understand that's part and parcel, one, of being a footballer, and two, being the captain of Manchester United. I imagine it'll be tough on him. You know, it's coming from every different angle. You even look at last weekend when they played Watford, it was like Harry Maguire dropped, even though Rangnick said that he was rotating to rest players because they had a lot of games coming up. But that's the kind of agenda at the moment, is everything is his fault. Even, you know, the goal that Joao Felix scored, Atletico, it's highlighting, you know, the short little space, can he move and all that. It's every small detail of his game that was being criticised. And it's, I hope to God he can come out the other side of it and become, you know, learn from it, become a better player. But it is tough, but I imagine he'd be dealing with it. He's a close-knit family and all that. And, you know, I have enough faith and, you know, belief in him that he can come out the other side of it.
That's interesting, because the Joao Felix goal is an unbelievable header, right? It's like it was kind of Shane Long at Wembley style. No one is ever going to save that, right? And I caught like 5 minutes of Soccer Box last night. It was Scholes and Neville, and it was the finishes on the Newcastle game that they win 6-2. Neville comes off the bench for John O'Shea, who was unbelievable in the game.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah.
And he has this really stupid back pass, which is in the direction of Barthez. Barthez, I think, might do his Achilles tendon trying to kick it clear. Scuffs the shot, and the ball's in the back of the net. Amiobi has it in the back of the net in like less than a second. And Neville runs away on the pitch, and he's laughing at like what a bad decision that was, and how he always now will pick out defenders passing the ball back, and then he's watching himself doing it. And Scholes sitting there beside him going, "Yeah, I'm exactly the same. As a pundit, I will have these conversations where I'm criticising the midfielders for not passing the ball forward, and then I look at the match and I'm like, oh, what was I doing? What was I doing? I guess I'm getting to the point where these two, who are two of the most influential pundits in world football at the moment, are analysing themselves and going, we didn't achieve the standards I hold players to as pundits. Is there something unfair about that when it comes to, like, here's the goal was scored. He moves left. He does move left. He should have moved right. And if he moved right, maybe the incredible header from the pinpoint accurate cross might not have resulted in the goal from two of the best footballers in the world.
Yeah, and that's like, even that Joe Felix one, it's split second decisions. Obviously, then I'll get hit with the comments like that, oh, well, he's playing for Manchester United, he's an £80 million defender, he should be able to read that. It happens so fast in these moments. And even if you look at the header, like, it doesn't matter how many times you watch it, you will never convince me that Joe Felix is like that good of a header of the ball. He's a technically gifted player who plays on the floor and he gets on the ball, he makes it. You're not expecting him to lunge and head it and then precisely put it where he has. It's one of those things that happen so fast. But yet, as you said there, like, even for myself, I look back on my old games, and now, like we spoke earlier in the show, when I'm coaching and I'm highlighting, you know, midfield players doing certain things, I'm looking at myself going, God, what am I doing there? Do you know? But that's part and parcel of it. I think you just, for any ex-player who is, you know, criticizing someone, you have to also, you know, as they say, put the boots on your own shoes and kind of think like, well, I didn't do all that all the time. Then you have to be open-minded to it, to think like, look, I understand what he's done there. Could he have done this, rather than going over the top and, you know, heavily criticizing?
Yeah, and look, that's not to say that Manchester United style play probably doesn't suit Harry Maguire, and they need to decide if they're going to be a team who can implicate his style into their future, or sign defenders who are going to be that high line playing in midfield and using their pace to escape. But like, they've got a manager who doesn't play to his strengths at the moment.
Yeah,
but there's also points that, like, Harry himself, and I'd be quick to tell Harry, he can improve on himself. Like, a lot of the times when United get caught on the counter, like, if you were, for argument's sake, Harry Maguire, right? You think, Harry, right? You have to be alert all the time that when we're in possession, it's not all comfortable and that blah, blah, blah. I need to know, you know, where the strikers are, my distance is David, if De Gea is playing a goal, how far behind me is he? What is the gap between me and him? What's the gap between me and my partner, centre half, my left back? You have to be switched on. And at times I find, because his confidence is so low and they're struggling and they're leaking goals and a lot of it is coming, you know, the responsibility is coming on him. It's like, can you improve yourself on that you're fully sharp? And even like smallest things of like, he needs to move the ball quicker. And I think he knows that, he takes too many touches, just like move the ball quicker. Those little details that he can improve on regardless of his confidence. It's just kind of like sharpening himself up and kind of reminding himself how he got this opportunity to be where he is. Those little details he can improve on.
All right. Give us your predictions for this game.
2-1 to the visitors.
Okay. Mm. All right. Well, you've made outrageous predictions in the past, and you've actually been correct on this show. So I'm not going to poo-poo it too much.
He's also, like, you know, a United supporter, you know?
A logical United supporter, yeah. And I think it'll be 2-1. Harry Maguire header from Maguire.
I'll go here. I think it will be one of them 2-2s. Do you remember like that? I don't know when it was. Do you remember Pogba? Pogba got the two goals, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a game like that where one team will be, say, City will dominate possession, United will go like 2-0 up, and then City will claw it back, or it'll be the flip of that you know, United end up magically throwing everything at it and clawing it back. It'll be a 2-2 draw.
City were 2-0 up in the aforementioned game there that David alluded to. It can happen. Mm-hmm.
It can.
Regular miracles can happen.
It was a miraculous style, very Pogba-esque performance, in that the two goals were ridiculous. As far as I remember, one of them was
they were nice.
One of them was particularly talented, and like, he was using somebody else's pinball machine to work his way through the defense.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and like, that's Pogba. He can do that. But what have you done since? So anyway, look, let's not go down the wormhole that is the future of Paul Pogba in football.
No.
I didn't get your thoughts on Liverpool against West Ham. They've just got to win that game, David. That's it. Doesn't really matter. Just ratchet the pressure up, get out, move on.
Yeah, that's it. Just 90 minutes. 1-0, close the door, 3 points, away we go. That's all Liverpool want at the moment. And I think I always allude back to Mourinho when he obviously took over Chelsea. He always identified the League Cup as a cup he wanted to win, because it was the first one. It kind of gives you that feel-good factor. And I think Liverpool have that now of winning that, especially in, look, can you name me a better nil-all draw game, obviously, than the penalties, the drama and that. It had everything. It was just an unbelievable game. And for Liverpool to come out on the other side of that, and then the whole thing of like all the young players in the academy playing through the early rounds, and then obviously, you know, Jurgen started to integrate the team into the first team towards the end of the competition. Even the small thing of Quiveen starting in the final. Like the whole thing has just, there's just a massive feel-good factor in Liverpool. They're going really well. And, you know, they'll just look like, can we just keep this train going, win against West Ham and then on to the next one.
This is the Football Kickoff with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sport. Let's briefly talk about Watford. Watford.
Watford.
Yeah. Right, John O'Shea in the brain. Watford against Arsenal. Arsenal fans are starting to believe. Like, a couple of wins. A couple of wins and all of a sudden they're the favourites for top four. Now, that will be interesting to see how flaky they are psychologically, because that's built into the club in the last decade.
You had to go there, didn't you?
It has to be said, though.
But you know what? They've got three games on hand. Yeah. Three games in hand. Yeah. It's no, I don't know who exactly their games in hand are against, because there's so many teams of so many games behind. But they're in the driving force. Yeah. It's theirs. It's inevitably theirs if they want it.
Feels like they never play. Never seen
them
play.
Well, there was about a month where they didn't.
I just never see them. Yeah. Their last game was against Wolves 8 days ago, Thursday night game. I was looking up there. These lads never play. They're just going to sneak into fourth. Like, no one will know.
Well, I think it was Phil was making the point during the week that when Antonio Conte won the league with Chelsea, he had no European football to worry about, because the previous season had been such a shit show at the end of the Mourinho era. And this is one of those situations for Arsenal where there's not much to distract them now. This is the be-all and end-all as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, it's probably the most quiet they've gone about a season, definitely post-Wenger, but it's done them the world of good.
Well, they apart from their captain being fired, essentially.
But even that was dealt with quite subtly. It was Aubameyang stopped playing and then just wouldn't.
They drove him to the airport and gave him a big bag of cash and said, there, that plane's going to Barcelona.
Yeah. But I mean, everyone knew that the end was nigh there.
It's true. And in fairness, they've come out of it the other side where the manager has been emboldened. So again, these are the ones that it is Watford side who have had a little bit of form, who have a manager who knows how to frustrate teams like Arsenal. You would expect them to. I mean, they probably should have won during the week.
Yeah, Roy Hodgson's done a good job there. They probably should have appointed him earlier if they really wanted to stay in the league, if they really wanted to be serious about this. But, you know, Watford and Norwich, like, they're just, for the next 10 years, there's going to be every other season in the Premier League.
Yeah,
just
okay.
Up and down, up and
so
down.
So what we're saying is Arsenal, prove me wrong, win this game.
Yeah, like,
prove it to us.
3-0.
Let's believe.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, like, you know, obviously with Spurs, obviously beat Manchester City and the celebrations after, and then they lose to Burnley. It's just like, there's also that part of, like, even you touching when you spoke about at the start, Watford and Arsenal. It's just Arsenal at the same time. Like, they were in the driving seat. They've got the games in hand. You're playing Watford next. Like, on paper, you're probably looking at the fixtures going, United should lose to City, albeit I know the history they have at the Etihad or whatever. Do you think we are massively in the driving seat here, that if we get these 3 points, we're up there, we still got games in hand, it should be good for us. But watch now, like Roy Hodgson, what if they got 3 clean sheets in their last 6? If they're going to stay up, Roy needs, obviously he knows he needs to get points on the board, he needs to win games. It's at Watford. It's one of them where you think like Arsenal should win, but then Watford will end up nicking it 1-0 or something, and then we're all, you know, we're back here again next week kind of going, well, Arsenal, who knows?
Well, luckily, the battle for fourth is a bunch of other teams who are similarly inclined, one of whom is playing on Monday night. I don't even know if we're supposed to talk about Spurs as a team who are capable of fighting for fourth, but I think they might be. They've got Everton, a very, very winnable game on Monday Night Football at 8 o'clock on Sky Sports. So the big question here is really about Antonio Conte's mood, it seems to be. But I don't know, did the cup game seem to take the wind out of all that? And it's like, well, actually, you know what, Antonio, you need to knuckle down here and prove to us that you still are an elite manager, because Middlesbrough just knocked you out of the cup.
He's still, sure, regardless of Middlesbrough beating Spurs, he's still an elite manager. Look what he did with Inter Milan last season. I think with the whole thing that happened with him, I think there is a little bit of the baby throwing, you know, the toys out of the pram. I think there is a bit of that with him. that was the big problem with Inter Milan. He wants full control of everything, and they obviously they had massive debt and they had to sell off players, and he wasn't happy, and obviously he parted ways. But I think there's been a little bit of, when the initial conversations happened with Daniel Levy, he probably promised him a bit too much, and he's not delivered on that to Conte. And I think he just said, hold on a minute, Paul, I'm happy to go here at any point. Like, but at the same time, he does need to get this team better organized and winning games. But there's no doubting he's elite manager. Even I actually found his comments after the Burnley game very interesting, because he said, like, the managers have changed, but the players haven't. And the results haven't, you know, so that's kind of indication to the players, like, you need to, you know, do more. They really do. Like, Harry Kane's not even at double digits for this season, which is phenomenal for someone who's been goal of the boot so many times. You know, he's obviously not happy. You've seen his performance against Manchester City, but that's the kind of level of performance you expect week in, week out from Harry Kane, because, you know, he is a world-class striker. There's no getting away from it.
Yeah, there's a scenario opening up over the next couple of seasons where he could win the Ballon d'Or if he was to put in that form over the 12 months. And, like, you know, you're the England captain, so you'll get an extra 10, 15, 20% of votes. But it doesn't feel like that's about to happen. It doesn't feel like he's going to put together 12 months of football. That.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially because, like, ultimately, I don't think his manager wants to be there. You forget that Conte turned Spurs down last summer as well. And it's like, oh yeah, okay, I'll go. I think he just has the drug of being a football manager, and was like, oh, I'll take this gig for a while.
The Man United job was coming up. He knew that. Yeah,
it's retribution for not getting that job. It was like, I'll show you. I'll go to Spurs and I'll beat you the fourth. I mean, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if that's his motivation here, Conte. I just don't think he's actually fully bought into the Spurs project at all. And I think Kane is loving playing under a world-class manager. He made that very clear because he wasn't happy with Nuno. That was very evident. So he's happy to play under Conte. But I think he believes that Conte has one eye out the door already, and Kane is once again thinking about his future, which feels like that's been the case for about 5 years now.
Well, it's a constant referendum, result to result to result. So are they going to get a result against Spurs on Monday night? Are Spurs going to get a result against Everton on Monday night?
Yes. Spurs have a very good record on Monday night. They've won a lot of their games. And then obviously Everton...
Does that matter? Does that matter? Because you've played in games that are repeated different nights of the week. Does that like, is there, well, we don't really
In a way, yes. We used to, obviously when we were in the championship, we used to love playing on a Friday night. Mainly because if you won on a Friday night, you might get Saturday, Sunday off.
Those Friday nights were good, basically. Good nights out.
Yeah. It was a great time because the manager would say, well, we see you Monday morning. Depending if we had a game Tuesday or whatever, but it was nice. Like Monday night games are probably the worst because you're almost waiting for all the football to be over and then play on the Monday. I wasn't a huge fan of Mondays. Like it's a quarter kickoff, like, or 8 o'clock, whatever it is. They change the times all the time, but like you're waiting all that time. Then you're training on a Saturday, you're training on a Sunday. You might, like, Spurs then will be traveling on the Sunday. It's kind of like all over the place. But look, I still expect Everton. I think Frank's still finding his feet. He doesn't know his best 11. You know what I mean? I watched part of the game last night against Boreham. Yes, he made a lot of changes with a lot of different faces, but it's just up and down at the moment. I still think they have enough to stay up, but I would predict Spurs will win.
The Dele Alli derby.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine Dele.
Can he play?
Imagine. Yeah, that's a permanent transfer.
Yeah, it's permanent, yeah.
Yeah. He didn't play in the cup last night. I presume he's cup tied along with Danny Van de Beek, but I would love to see a Dele Alli performance, a throwback to 2015-16, because he was some player. Ooh.
This is the week to do it, right? Just to prove
this is it, isn't it? Just, you know, do you remember the goal he got against Palace?
Oh, the flick and the volley.
The flick over and Jedniak and the volley. Yeah, if he was to come up with a magical moment, that would be... And then he just like run over in front of the Spurs fans, all Adebayor-ish and all that. Yeah, like, look at me, I'm back, baby.
We need an angry Dele. We need a back against the wall, I'll show the world Dele. He seems a bit comfortable at the moment and kind of a bit sad the way he just throws around the pitch.
Cullum, I think he's been comfortable for probably 3 years now. He really does.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to look in that situation. You think, like, boy's got the world at his feet that time. You know, he was flying with Spurs under Pochettino, Champions League final, regular with England. It's just, I don't know. I don't know, is it the money, the comfortness, whatever, but you're thinking, come on, man, you've got so much to offer. Like, kick on and you can become could have become a world-class midfielder, but it's just, it's gone downhill, and now you're trying to revamp your career at Everton. You know, got to do more.
Well, he could have been Frank Lampard. He's got the game sense and the ability and the goal-scoring knack. Maybe this is the opportunity for him to learn. Hopefully, Lampard has that coaching ability. Right, the football kickoff with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sport. We asked you to pick a five-a-side. Schmeichel versus Melier. Schmeichel won that. Matip versus Jupp. Matip won. Cleverley versus Xhaka. I mean, that's... Xhaka won that one. De Bruyne versus Fernandes. De Bruyne won. The Fernandes thing, really, his popularity is waning all over the place at the moment.
It's like I was saying last week.
Well, there was never a question, surely, of De Bruyne, like, or Fernandes over De Bruyne. I'm sorry.
But the Man United fans would have told you that when he arrived and he was taking the penalties and his confidence was through the roof and every single thing that Manchester United did all went through him, that he was as good as any player in the Premier League, which is Kevin De Bruyne. That's what they're talking about, because he's the best. So,
yeah.
Well, obviously Mo Salah's the best, but... You know,
Do you think that there's that, like, alpha... You know, the alpha type problem at United between him and Ronaldo?
I do. I think taking the penalties off him was an idiotic decision. They should have just said, like, they obviously felt they needed to pad the stats for Ronaldo, but Fernandes is clearly a confidence player, clearly gets, has big balls taking penalties, is good at it. Leave it with him.
He took the penalty against your lot and missed. And Ronaldo watched. And then ever since then, he's like, well, I better give it to you, so. But I do think that Cristiano Ronaldo coming into the club has definitely impacted his sense of alpha, like David was saying, in the dressing room, because I think he needs to feel in charge of everything.
Yeah, you must have seen this in dressing rooms, right?
Well, I wasn't fortunate enough to play with a global superstar like Ronaldo. Look, he's the biggest in the world. That's different. I've seen lads crumble when fellas come in like a so-called better player in their position. I've seen other fellas rise to the challenge. I just kind of, I don't know, I look at it from the outside kind of going, maybe Bruno was the one ranting and raving and training and in games and whatever, and everybody left him alone because obviously he was producing goals, assists, his performances, what he did for that club, and probably what the 18 months before Ronaldo joined was just phenomenal. Then Ronaldo's coming, it's just like, he's like, whoa, I can't deal with this.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Like, there's nobody, nobody seems that they can talk to Ronaldo.
It certainly seems that way. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when the new manager comes in and goes, I don't really want this kid anymore. And they're like, oh, but look at all the money he makes for us on social media. We're the most social media-fied team in the world. That was part of their financial report during the week, which made everybody very happy and it made a lot of people a lot of money, but it hasn't resulted in results on the pitch. This was a great, were you guys in school together? Like, couple of years apart.
No.
Well, that was very quick. Now, hold on. I think we were in St. Anthony's, but different years.
Yeah. I went to a different school in Ballintemple because my grandmother lived up the road, the road, really, I should say. And then I moved school.
David went to rugby school. And look how he turned out.
A posh school. Is that code in Cork as well?
Yeah, some would call it posh. I've no problem with that. My mum's side of the family went there. My uncles went there. My grandfather went there. It was part of family tradition. I wanted to go there. All
you
my friends
need to
went there.
It worked out for you. It's okay. An education is education, you know?
Yeah, great school.
Did you play rugby?
Everybody was made playing first year.
Right.
That was the kind of what you call it. But it kind of got to the point where, like, there was a couple of lads in my year that were like 6'7", 6'8", 15, 16 stone at 13. And I was a little scrawny, little young fella. And I was like, no. And then any time, you know, like there might be a ruck and the ball would come to me, like it'd come off the ruck right from the scrum half. I played out half, right? And I would just like start dinking balls in over the top and that. And I was just kind of like trying to upset the balance so that they kind of said, like, this fella clearly does not want to play rugby. Get him out of here.
The creative type in Irish rugby is like banned. Oh, yeah. He's trying stuff. We don't want that.
Well, they had all these loops and all that. I remember one was like, you know, off what's it called, the scrum, right? And we go like scrum half play at the out half, you go second center and you loop back, get it back, and then you out to the winger and all this. I was like, nah, there's too much going on here. No, I mean, it's too much for me.
And now as a coach,
I wasn't a rugby player.
Now as a coach, you're like, okay, we're gonna have this, there's gonna be many parts of this, so pay attention. And they're like, no, sorry mate, not having it.
No, of course, when it comes to football, I'm more open-minded. I don't understand, even to this day, I don't really understand all, you know, certainly with mauls and rucks and whatever, being on your feet and being off the ground and all that. I was just kind of like, whoa. I just try and, like, obviously, I know Peter Omani and everyone raves about his turnovers and, you know, that. So I try and watch Peter and kind of get an understanding that he's always on his feet and he's hard to knock off and whatever. So I get the gist of that, but too many rules. Even last week, Ireland and the Six Nations, you know, that rule, of course.
Two red cards.
I don't understand that, but, like, then obviously they can see the scrums is it, and I don't know.
Well, that was idiotic. That was literally the most stupid rule that any sport has ever had, ever. Sending two players off for one offence. Whoever came up with that idea needs their head examined. That's a good point to end this one this week. A nice little stroll down memory lane for you two.
That was great.
Thanks to you both for joining us. We'll see you again next Friday around about 10:30. Take care. Enjoy the games.
The Football Kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.